You know, we're all biologically programmed to be afraid of giants, big things. Take, for example, my reaction when I walked into the church last Sunday morning at 6 a.m. and found this little guy hanging out on the wall. It was right there, right next to that altar server right there in the middle, kind of near that, right there, yeah. But he's gone now, don't worry, Ben, he's all right. But you can imagine my shock and surprise and fear. Let's just say it took a while for my heart rate to come back down. Needless to say, I did not like mess with him. I did not take on that giant. I let him sleep. I have no idea where he is now. I hope he finds his way out. But it's true, right? It's true. Anything that's bigger than us, or bigger than it should be, is scary to us. That's why we're talking about how to defeat giants in this series. As we've been saying, giants are powerful opponents who want to scare, bother, or hurt us. They can be people who intimidate us, or a place that upsets us, an event that is frightening, or something that upsets us, like a divorce or unemployment or the threat of bankruptcy. And over the course of this series, we've given you many practical strategies for defeating giants straight out of the Bible. And to summarize what we've talked about so far, here's what we've said. When you're facing a stubborn giant, be persistent. It will pay off in the end. When a prideful giant tries to terrorize you, you can take him down through humility. There are some giants who will try to use your shortcomings and failings, your sins, against you. But you can disarm that kind of giant by a little self-reflection and kind of working on yourself, self-improvement. There's a lot of dumb giants out there, and they are vulnerable to trickery and a little cleverness. Don't hesitate to use it. And then finally, last week, we said that when you're facing a really powerful giant and you feel really weak against that giant, try to turn your disadvantages into benefits and your weaknesses into strengths. If you don't remember anything else from this series, remember this, that giants can be defeated, but not by trying to battle them on their own terms. Rather, use your own hidden strengths, the ones that God has given you in particular. And if you've missed any of the episodes in this series, you can find them on the watch page of our website, sthillary.org. Well, today is the last episode of the series, and of course, we're battling one more giant. And I'll tell you up front, this giant is the cruelest and scariest of all. In fact, it's a giant that could only be taken on by someone more powerful than we are, someone willing to face this giant so we wouldn't have to. A little spoiler alert, I'll tell you, that person was Jesus. And we find it in today's gospel story. Jesus was taken to an abandoned rock quarry. It was called the Skull on account of how it was shaped. It kind of looked like a skull. And they crucified him there in between two criminals, one on his right and the other on his left. Crucifixion was a form of execution that led to a slow, horrible death through suffocation. The pain was so incomparable to anything else that a new word had to be developed in order to describe it. That word that we use in the English language is excruciating. It means out of the cross. Crucifixion was a Roman penalty that was frequently imposed on thieves, political rebels, and slaves who had escaped and revolted. Now, before nailing Jesus to the cross, the soldiers removed his clothing because the Romans crucified people naked or just with their undergarments. Why? In an effort to remove the very last shred of human dignity. Now, tunics, you know, the outer cloak that people wore in those days, they were really valuable, actually. And so the soldiers divided Jesus' garments by casting lots, throwing dice. And that was to see which soldier would get to take home the tunic. Over and over in this story, Jesus is mocked. He's mocked for claiming to be the Messiah. An inscription was even nailed on the cross to shame him. It notified everyone of the crime that Jesus was accused of committing and the reason for his crucifixion. And that inscription would have been carried in front of him on the way to the place of his death. And the inscription read, "This is the King of the Jews." That was his crime. After 3 excruciating hours on the cross, Jesus finally breathed his last. And just like that, it was over. Like so many other movements in those days, the leader of the Jesus movement had been killed, and his followers scattered. The greatest underdog in history had been defeated by the cruelest giant of all. Every hope of victory had been snuffed out. And yet, here we are. 2,000 years later today, with billions of believers around the world celebrating Jesus as a king. Despite the colossal cruelty of Roman execution, the way of Jesus could not be stamped out. His movement could not be snuffed out. The Romans, you know, they tried. They really tried. They tried to eradicate all memory of Jesus. They even built a pagan shrine over the site in the year 135. But the result was just the opposite. Pilgrims kept pouring into the area, and they still do today, coming to the Holy Sepulchre to venerate the place where Jesus died and the tomb where he was laid. All the efforts to humiliate him with trumped-up charges are precisely what Christians celebrate today in churches around the world. The mockery of the cross has become a cause for victory. The very symbol of revilement and torture the Romans had used to crush anyone who got in their way has now become an unmistakable sign of hope. And it all happened in a most unexpected way, through a shocking display of weakness. The rulers, you know, they sneered at Jesus and said, "He saved others, let him save himself." The soldiers also taunted him, "If you're the King of the Jews, save yourself." The criminal next to him even piled on, saying, "Are you not the Messiah? Save yourself and us." But what they did not understand is it was because Jesus chose not to save himself that he could save everyone else. It was because he did not fight back or call legions of angels to his side or stir up his followers to violence that he was able to finally open the gates of paradise that had been closed so long since the sin of Adam. It was because Jesus called out on the cross in the midst of his anguish, "Father, forgive them," that he was able to promise eternal life to the repentant thief and to us. Jesus defeated the giant of sin and death and mounted his throne as King of the universe by doing what no one else dared to do. To forgive. To forgive in the face of unimaginable cruelty. To forgive amid the pain. To forgive in the middle of an atrocious injustice. You know, the word forgiveness means to give up something. It means to give up the desire of punishment, to give up the thought of revenge, to give up the wish to hold someone accountable. See, resentment is not power. Retribution is not power. Getting even is not power. Forgiveness is power. Forgiveness is power because you get to choose what the future looks like. Let me explain. It was a snowy, cold Friday afternoon in November when a woman named Wilma Dirksen was home with 2 of her children. She was cleaning the family room of the basement, and her 13-year-old Candace called her for what turned out would be the last time. Candace wanted a ride home from school, but the family only had one car, and with everything else Wilma had to do, she just couldn't pull it off, so she told Candace to take the bus, as she had many times before. Hours later, Candace had not returned home. The police were called, and 7 weeks later, her body was found. Late one night, a stranger knocked on the Dirksen's door. It was a man. He said that his daughter also had been killed a few years earlier. The Dirksen's invited him in, and he told them the whole story. A suspect had been arrested, he said, and put on trial 3 times, but ultimately got off on a technicality. Sitting there at the Dirksen's kitchen table, the man railed against the criminal justice system. He said that the whole process had destroyed him, his family, his career, his health. The thing is, he didn't talk much about his daughter, how much he loved her, how wonderful she was. Rather, he talked about getting justice. He was consumed with getting justice, and it had torn him apart. Years later, the police called the Dirksen's. They had a suspect. He was eventually brought to trial and convicted. But the Dirksen's were not relieved, surprisingly. Far from it. See, they had grown up in the Mennonite religious tradition that emphasized forgiveness over retribution. But they wondered how they could ever forgive this man of the awful things he had done. They agonized over that question, and they fought every instinct to fight back, to call for the death penalty, to demand an eye for an eye. In one interview, Wilma said that she was reluctant. She said, "I'm not a saint. I'm not always forgiving. It's the last thing you want to do." Then she made a fist and she said, "I would have had many more people on my side. I probably would have had a huge advocate by now. I would have had a huge organization behind me," had she chosen not to forgive the perpetrator. But in the end, the Dirksen's walked away from the false promise of power through retribution. They found the strength to forgive and in the process saved themselves. You know, the common belief is that the only way to defeat a giant is through some kind of extraordinary show of force. And for almost every living being, the worst giant of all, the greatest enemy, the thing we're most afraid of, is our mortality. Death is an unforgiving giant that will come to claim every human soul in one way or another and at one time or another. But there is a greater power. It's the only power that can defeat death. In fact, it's the greatest power on earth: the forgiveness of Christ. He found the strength to forgive. He walked away from the false promise of power. And in a story with unmistakable irony, he became the king of the universe and saved us all. You know, at the beginning of this series, I told you that there are good giants and bad giants. We've been focusing on the bad ones. But maybe you could be one of the good ones. Because when you find the strength to forgive someone who doesn't deserve it, you become a great giant. You become a giant of a human being. And everyone needs to forgive someone. So I invite you this week to think about the person in your life that you need to forgive, or you need to forgive more fully, or you need to express your forgiveness. Think about that, pray about it, and ask God to show you what your next step is. I recently watched a great movie. It was released about 10 years ago, but I just got around to watching it. It's called The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Ben Stiller plays an employee at Life magazine who spends every day in a boring job developing photographs for the magazine. And he's too afraid to really like live his own life. So every day, Walter daydreams about becoming the hero in some great adventure. He eventually develops a pretty serious crush on one of his coworkers, Cheryl. But as usual, he's too scared to do anything about it. But when both employees are about to get laid off by Life's new owners, Walter goes out on a limb. He goes on an exciting quest to find the perfect photo for the final issue of the magazine. And the thing is, in the process of all that, he was transformed. He became courageous. And after watching that movie, I've come to a greater realization that some of the most important moments of my life have been influenced by fear. Maybe you're the same way. I hope you've enjoyed this series. I hope it's strengthened your courage to face whatever giant intimidates you. I hope it has opened your eyes to the truth that there are a lot of scary giants out there. But there is nothing to fear because God is bigger than all of them.